It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show, talking conservation districts again today. We've got the three local conservation districts represented. Jeff Nieslanek is the president of Mount Sopris. Peter Dodd is on the board of the Southside Conservation District. And Charles Ryden is the president of Bookcliff Conservation District. How many times the president of the Bookcliff Conservation District, Charles?
Over 30, but I'm not sure.
A few. In addition to Farm Bureau since probably its inception. So the real reason why these gentlemen are here today, recently in November, they gave a presentation to the Garfield County Board of Commissioners about what the conservation districts have done over the last year in 2019. And I guess I didn't realize conservation districts actually is a partnership with the county as well. You know, I knew that it was established at the federal level back into Dust Bowl years, after Dust Bowl, to conserve the land and help farmers with irrigation projects and to try and prevent another Dust Bowl. I didn't realize that there was local buy-in as well.
That's right, Gabe. Conservation districts, there's 77 in the state of Colorado. The idea came after the Great Depression and Dust Bowl when districts around each state divided up to help landowners and ag producers. Local input didn't really happen for our local conservation districts till maybe about 15 to 20 years ago when Garfield County put in money to get into the pot, I guess should say, to help local landowners and ag producers.
Local input didn't start until 15 or 20
Correct.
Years ago. So the conservation districts existed, but not with the local, like the boards that you have set up now.
That's very true. A lot of districts within the state of Colorado don't have local support, and their funding is very limited. So we're fortunate with Garfield County to have a pot of money that we can provide to landowners and cost shares and the weed cost share and the irrigation cost share.
So 20 years ago, is that how these things always work? Or when the commissioners decided they were going to get involved, did they go to the federal agencies, conservation districts, are they under ag?
Department of Agriculture.
Okay. So did they say, okay, we'll be involved, we'll give some cost share money to you as well, but this is how we want the local area represented? Or is that typically what happens if a local, if commissioners or another local, you know, government entity want to get involved? Does the federal government require local input?
Federal government does not require local input. I think it was the other way around, that the local districts went to the county. The county didn't go to the district to ask for money for projects that needed to be done. And it started with a low dollar amount and then grew over the years. Yeah.
So the commissioners at that time, and I don't know who the commissioners would have been 20 years ago.
I don't either.
I want to say Arnold Mackley was on the board at that time. And yeah, okay. I would not do myself justice. I would show my ignorance if I tried to guess. Anyway, the commissioners at that time said, okay, that sounds like a good idea. And if we're going to do this, we want some local input, and that's how we got where we are today.
Exactly.
Okay. Of the three conservation districts, you all have similar boards and operate in similar ways. I know you work together a lot.
Yeah, pretty much similar, I think. Most of it back in the years before they started contributing some money for, you know, like the weeds got to be out of hand in some other counties, and so they wanted to see keep on top of that, and so they developed different things, and then so the county wanted to make, we couldn't eradicate them completely, but we could stay on top of it a little bit. So back in their earlier years, there was no money. You couldn't get everything done you wanted to do. Your budget was so tight that there was no room. Usually when we went to meetings and stuff, when we got a little money for going to the meeting for gas or something, mileage, we usually get donated it back to the district. We didn't even take anything because there wasn't any. But so this has made it really great that we have some grants and we have some other things going on.
Sure. So what did you tell the commissioners when you met with them back in November? What kind of were you just sharing? Again, it's information about 2019, but yet you also included some of this decade numbers, like 2010 through 2019.
We did, Gabe. We do a yearly report with the commissioners every year because they obviously like to see where their money goes.
Which I appreciate.
Out of their budget. But we went back 9 years, from 2010 to 2019, and we kind of compiled numbers of what the county has spent with our noxious weed program and our irrigation cost share program. And we compiled those and then put them, added that together with landowner input and numbers we've come up with. In our noxious weed program, we've spent over $1 million in the last 9 years to have cost share. Which is great for the county to have input. We have a great county weed vegetative management. Steve Anthony helps us with this program. And that's money that goes directly into our county. So,
And that's total dollars spent.
That's total dollars spent.
That's not the cost share. That includes what the landowners have spent as well as the county and the federal money.
So out of that $1 million, over $330,000 has come from Garfield County. The rest, $672,000, has come from landowner input. So it's an incentive for landowners to do a vegetative management plan.
So from the three of you, I don't know, Charles, maybe you would have the most expertise on this. How important is it to get rid of these noxious weeds?
Oh, it's a critical thing. If they take over, like some places of knapweed and white top is a little bit bad, but there's leafy spurge is the two one in some of the other counties that are just been taken over by it, and it's come in from the high ranges where elk come from one county to the other and different things. They gradually bring that stuff in. So.
Peter might have some input on this, too.
I think a big
too,
part actually. Of it is we're transitioning from getting rid of weeds to managing them, you know, to be able to manage the weeds and to introduce species that can compete better with the weeds to crowd them out has kind of been a big focus, I think, moving forward. The tamarisk and knapweed as well.
Is it different for you, Peter? You have water, what, maybe 2 months out of the year on Southside up
Most
Divide
of
Creek?
Time, yes.
Yeah. Is it different for you? Do these noxious species, do they bother you more than they do anybody else, or is it really pretty much the same?
I think lack of water definitely more weeds definitely come up with a lack of water that we're able to – Our grass species need to grow a little bit longer to crowd out the weeds so they aren't able to encroach on it in other areas. And having to, you know, having an overgrazing on your lands causes a lot of disturbance and you'll get a lot more weeds. So you need to watch that.
Main weeds that are really dangerous is the ones that have got root that go 25 feet in the ground. Yeah. And so they don't have to fight for that water. It's a couple, 3 inches on top like the grass and everything else does.
Tamarisk is the big one. That really
there.
How many gallons of water a day do they say a single plant? I forget what it is, but it's a lot.
It is a lot. Yes. And there's millions, maybe billions of those plants. And the seeds have a long time they can just stay dormant before they can sprout up in any place. Yeah.
I didn't know that either. By the way, if you'd like to learn more about any of the conservation districts, I'm pretty sure that they all kind of lead to the same place, don't they? The websites?
Do.
Yeah. You can search Facebook, actually. I want to say that you've all got Facebook pages. I don't know how active they are.
Pretty active.
So it's mtsopriscd.org, and then bookcliffcd.org, and then southsidecd.org are the three websites. Again, I think they all go to the same place.
They do.
So generally the same information. They're all managed from the same Department of Agriculture office. Thanks to Sherry for she's fantastic.
Yes, she
when
is.
She retires, she's going to have to be like Mike Kishimoto. When she retires, she's going to have to come back
Exactly.
We've told her she can't retire back until she trains somebody new to fill her shoes, which is hard to do.
How long would that take?
3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
I think I've been on the board, what, maybe 3 to 4 years now, and I learn stuff, new stuff all the time, you know, of how it functions and paperwork you got to fill out to get, you know, to receive monies from the State Conservation Board and rules you have to follow. I mean, I'm learning all the time.
Well, I think we all do, and when I learn it all, I'll be too old to use it. So, but
we'll be relearning it again when you get someone new in there.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And that goes back to our board. She manages our three boards, which are made up. The question you had earlier, you know, they're made up of mostly landowners. Mm-hmm. To be on the board, it's an elected official, but you have to own or manage land in that district. So most of our boards are made up of landowners and land users, but we also have a few educators. We have an attorney on one of the boards, which is
always helpful.
Which is very helpful. So it's a diverse group, and it's good to have those different inputs for sure at board meetings.
And like Ag Day and that kind of stuff, and all these things, the side things she puts together and makes sure they happen and work, and they've been really successful.
Ag Expo, by the way, is February 1st this year. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Take a quick break right now. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're talking about the conservation districts in our area. Mount Soprus, Southside, and Buckcliff. Again, we've got Peter Dodd from Southside, Charles Ryden from Buckcliff, and Jeff Nieslanik from Mount Soprus Conservation District in our area. Again, volunteer boards, all volunteers that get together. Is it once a month?
Yes.
Once a month and talk about these cost share programs and help decide where grant money goes. Again, landowners pay a portion of these cost shares. I guess maybe we should talk a little bit more about how that whole process works. We talked about the weed cost share. Again, about $1 million over the last 10 years in our area, about $600,000 of that money actually came from landowners themselves to treat their own land. Then around $300,000 came from the Garfield County Commissioners. And that's for noxious weeds. There are other cost shares as well that the conservation districts talk about. And what are those numbers? I imagine that those numbers are probably a little bit larger.
Well, yeah, Gabe, we also have a irrigation cost share program, which is also Garfield County money, straight from Garfield County. And over the same time period in the last 10 years, Garfield County has kicked in over $307,000, and landowner input has been over $500,000. So we've spent close to $808,000 on that in the last few years. And that's cost share projects that include head gates, small pipelines, maybe a little bit of small sprinkler systems, stuff like that. Water quality and quantity improvements.
That was my next question. So quality and
quantity.
So if you don't pay for normal maintenance on irrigation systems, but if it's something that will improve the efficiency of that irrigation system, then that's something that the conservation districts will look at in these grants.
That's correct. And then we use Through that program, we use NRCS as a partner to supply technical support and engineering and all that.
That's the Natural Resources Conservation Service, where Mike Kishimoto technically retired from a couple years ago.
That's correct.
Although he continues to, and we're very thankful for it as well. There again, I'm not sure who would fill his shoes if he ever decided to actually walk away completely, but we're very thankful for him. And it's also, I know, Jeff, you and I talk a lot about another level of the Department of Agriculture locally. NRCS manages the snowtail sites.
That's
right.
That's correct.
That keep track of the snowpack every winter. And, well, this year it was into the summer, I think, that we actually still had some snow up at Bison Lake, I think, which is the closest one. Well, you've got some actually in Mount Soprus too, don't you?
We have one up on McClure.
And yeah. But yeah, that's through the NRCS and the Department of Agriculture and distributed by any number of other local agencies. I know we actually get ours filtered down through the Roaring Fork Conservancy, though it actually comes from...
It comes from NRCS, yeah, correct.
Absolutely. Do any of you look at that information in the winter? Do you look at what the snowpack is?
Every day almost.
Okay.
Every day to kind of plan out what kind of year it's going to be and just to think about, you know, to plan for the future. We look at it specifically ours is McClure and Mesa Lakes in that area because that's where kind of the storms come from that are going to dump on the south side. So that's the areas we look at, and I'm sure Jeff's probably McClure and maybe Bison, but I doubt Bison so much.
Anything that's high that collects snow is a good thing.
Yeah.
And Bison Lake is a little closer to the water that you get and some of the ones in Silk Mesa and different. And
sure.
And on Klein Topper and off the Main Oaks and that
sure,
kind of thing.
Sure. Whereas McClure obviously comes down the frying pan and takes care of that. I'm sure that there is at least one snowtell site up on Independence somewhere.
I believe that
the headwaters of the Roaring Fork. So seriously, a daily basis? I mean, are you exaggerating, Peter? Or?
Well, any time there's a storm, the next day, you know, they update it at midnight. And so we'll look at – sometimes we'll stay up till midnight just to see what happened, you know, if we got – you know, it's the water inches is really important, what's in the snow, whether it's a dry snow, wet snow.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a matter of how deep the snow is. It's a matter of the moisture content.
Yeah,
the water. How much water is actually in there.
A lot of people also don't know, Gabe, Mount Silpers and Bookcliff districts both have what we call co-AgMet stations.
That's right. And these are local weather stations.
That's correct.
So
they're in the valleys or in production areas, and it tells you ground moisture, maybe when certain crops need to be irrigated or need water, wind speed. Recent moisture and that kind of stuff.
I know we talked about that before. Stephen from – does he work for the Farm Service Agency?
NRCS.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Stephen came in to talk about the co-AgMet stations. And I want to say you have one in the Roaring Fork Valley, right, Jeff?
Yeah, up the – just above Carbondale on the
Crystal River.
Crystal River.
Oh, okay. So it is on the on the Crystal, not on the Roaring Fork. And I want to say, is there one Silt Mesa, something like that?
Yeah,
Charles,
on Norm Hunt's place, Virginia Hunt. Now they've one there.
Okay, and again, these are local weather stations. They're intended to provide some local information about what is going on nearby, as opposed to. Well, and it's not just that, but it's also the specific information about the ground moisture and the water content and that kind of thing. Because you can drown crops if you give them too much water, just as much as you can kill them by not giving them any water. Right, Peter? Sorry. I keep picking on you.
You just got to grow a different type of grass, and then you can just drown it out. Or not.
Right. Yeah. There you go. We're definitely not anywhere in this area. We're definitely not dealing with, you know, rice paddies or that kind of thing. We don't have that much water. How much – I know I keep picking on you because I know that, you know, Dry Hollow, there's a reason why they call it Dry Hollow and Divide Creek. You do have water just for maybe 2-3 months a year. How late did you have water in the season this year, out of curiosity?
I think till July. And then it really went down in July. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It was
for
probably
you.
About 2-3 weeks longer than previous years.
Otherwise, can you store enough water, or does your season just end once there's no more water?
It
in the
pretty
mountains?
Much just ends. You know, we rely on July. Maybe there's some monsoons in July later on in the year, the monsoons, and maybe August, September to kind of get your grass growing again. Because we don't have any water to put on it because there's no water in the stream to do it.
Okay. So while everybody else is complaining about the monsoons because the hay's on the ground getting moldy, you're saying bring it on.
Bring it on, absolutely.
Again, if you'd like to learn more about any of the conservation districts in our area, use any one of the three websites, bookcliffcd.org, mountsoprascd.org, that's mtsoprascd.org, or southsidecd.org. And again, you can connect with them on Facebook as well. As I mentioned, the Garfield County Ag Expo 2020 happens again this year at the Garfield County Fairgrounds. We'll talk a little bit about that and wrap things up when we come back. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're talking about the conservation districts in our area. We've got Charles Ryden from Buckcliff Conservation District, Peter Dodd from Southside, Jeff Nieslanik from Mount Sopris. Again, if you want to learn more about any one of those, the websites all go to the same place, but it's Buckcliff, Southside, or Mount Sopris, cd.org. And they're also pretty active on Facebook as well. You've actually got pretty good buy-in from younger people with the conservation districts. I actually asked during the last break, should we talk about membership? And actually, all three of you have full boards. That's a good thing, I think.
Yes.
Peter, you were saying that you actually have a couple of young folks, younger, that are on your conservation district board. And not only are they on the board, but they actually show up to meetings and they're actually involved and engaged.
And they belong to families that have been in the Valley for a long time, so they have a little bit of knowledge they bring with them, which is pretty important. We'd also like to get, you know, new people that are just new to the area as well, too, but it's always helpful to have a little experience behind somebody coming in.
Does that make a difference? Is farming, and actually, I guess I should take a step back. It's not just about people that are actually working the land. You've got other people that are on your conservation district boards as well that are just interested in conservation in general.
Correct. It is because, you know, when they first kind of settled this area in the 1900s and started developing, you know, they were trying to grow lettuce in our area and stuff like that to grow. And that just didn't work because we didn't have the water for it or the right climate or the elevation. So it's kind of good to know what you can grow, what you can't grow on this elevation, and to bring a little bit of knowledge of what's been done in our area, and to know people. You know, knowing people in the area is pretty important to communicate your ideas to them about the conservation district and how to help them or provide programs to them.
Do you think that'll continue to be the case as the economy continues changing? I mean, just in my lifetime, I've seen it go from, you know, primarily agricultural to, you know, more tourist-based. But you think that will always be the case?
Hobby farms and stuff. Yeah, I think it's going to keep continuing.
I think we'll probably have to bring in some different board members to cater to those people because we might not have the knowledge that they do. Mm. So people that move into the area that have an experience in that, you know, hobby farming, they might be better to provide that.
Or gentleman farming, as Grandpa used to call it. You also, speaking of young people, you've got a program called Youth Water Leadership. Is this the conservation districts?
Is its own program. The conservation districts have sponsored it. It's a program set up through the local schools, mainly in RE1 district right now. It's kids that want to learn about water programs and whatnot, and we've kind of partnered with them to throw in a little bit of ag education with it, so we can teach some of these kids about ag water, not just the river flows and municipal water and stuff like that. So, and as far as the district goes, I think as long as we can teach some kids about agriculture and water use in our valleys, that's a good thing. So we're a sponsor of that. That program is going on now through the school district, so it's exciting to see what will happen with that.
Speaking of water, Peter, you're actually on the Colorado River Basin.
Colorado River Watershed Association.
Okay.
Which is there's seven districts up and down the Colorado River that are kind of part of that, and we try to, you know, have a couple of meetings a year and express what, you know, things going on along the Colorado River we'd like to address.
As it relates to consumptive use or?
It could be about weeds. It could be about anything that's happened along the Colorado River, Trans Mountain diversions, anything that we feel that is necessary to take to the next level, to the state level, to be addressed. You know, that's kind of the avenue to go for the conservation districts.
Speaking of the state level, we have the Colorado State Water Plan, which has been in progress, been in development for how many years now? I want to say that the original deadline that was set was several years ago, and still working on it. But as members of conservation districts, you're also still very active in that process, right?
We are. We're through the state water plan, it has been settled down that local communities need to do water plans on their own tributaries. So we've partnered with Middle Colorado Watershed Council to do consumptive use watershed planning on the Middle Colorado River. This is a very long ongoing project. We're mapping ditches, trying to secure the water rights that are along the Colorado River.
And Middle Colorado would be Glenwood Canyon to DeBeck Canyon, basically, right? Yeah, actually from Shoshone, right?
It is from Shoshone because that water right is considered on the Middle Colorado, and that's the number one water right on that section of.
So the state set up these sections along the Colorado River and along these other rivers all across the state, you know, to manage them. And by I think it's by law they have to have stream management plans in place in another few years, and so. We felt we needed to get involved to address that because there wasn't agriculture really wasn't well represented on those planning.
Right. It's agriculture falls into the category of consumptive uses just like municipalities do.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I think that obviously when you've got paid staff, it's easy to tell somebody to attend a meeting on your behalf, that kind of thing. And it took a little while for agricultural users to get involved, but I think now that there's a lot of buy-in from agricultural users because they see what's at stake. And, of course, this water plan is all about the upper and lower basin states, right? That's kind of what precipitated this.
That's part of the puzzle, I guess, Gabe. Yeah. It's the compact calls in the lower basin and the upper basin and the agreements they've made years ago. So if your water right is before 1922, you're in good shape. But these post-22 water rights could in the future
wet years,
be.
So.
Well, you're in good shape as of right now.
I think part of the water plan is to demonstrate that to the upper and to the lower basin mostly that we're very serious about our water. We're very serious about planning it. We've gone through all these steps to document this. And so it makes it harder for them to come take our water. That's what my thought is.
Right. The planning ahead for the argument, because you know the argument is going to happen. And it's interesting. Some people have different thoughts about this. I've heard from some people that they don't think the lower basin call is ever going to be an issue. Because I forget what the rule is. It's so many years out of a 10-year period.
It's 7 million acre feet every 10 years. So it's 70 million acre feet for 10 years.
Right. And we've been fine so far, but
they've been overusing in the lower basin, California, Arizona, absolutely. Nevada.
And now a couple of years ago, they started actually delivering water again to the Sea of Cortez, which was mandated under an international treaty for years and years, and we just didn't do it.
Right.
And then a few years ago, they actually decided, yeah, we need to adhere to this agreement that we made all those years ago to Mexico. And so that takes more water out of the equation for the upper and lower basin states as well.
Yeah, water is really a complex issue.
Isn't it, though?
And we are really blessed in our book club is where we got a water attorney on the board, and that makes it a huge difference. You know, you've got questions you need answered.
And I think, you know, Colorado has been dealing with water, you know, for a lot longer time, I think, than California, you know, our water laws and all these other states, because it's such a controversial thing. You know, none of these other states in the Midwest, they don't really have, you know, any of these water problems like we do in Colorado, where we have to share on the west.
Right.
The west end of the United States.
Well, I think a lot of Midwestern states are riparian states, too, where if you have access to it, you can take it, as opposed to the prior appropriation law, which we have here in Colorado. We're getting a little technical here, so maybe we should go back to the Garfield County Ag Expo, by the way, happens this year on Saturday, February 1st at the Garfield County Fairgrounds. And a number of speakers already lined up for next year as well at the Ag Expo. I'm sure if you follow one of the conservation districts on Facebook, you can keep up to date on any new additions that they might make to the Ag Expo, plus check out the websites as well. And you already have some sponsors that will be involved with the Ag Expo already as well, right?
Yes. Yep.
You guys want me to mention those? Or go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Well, we have three.
I stole the paper.
We have three big sponsors this year for Ag Expo: Alpine Bank, Aspen Valley Land Trust, and Grand River Health. But some smaller sponsors, Garfield County, NRCS, and obviously the Conservation Districts has partnered with CSU on this whole Ag Day project. There will be 50 to 60 vendors there that day signed up to show their product or whatever they're selling, I guess.
Including representatives from NRCS and the Conservation Districts as well.
There will be information about all of our cost share programs, all of our educational programs that we do throughout the year, all at Ag Day. So,
and I think Abby is going to do another presentation on I always want to say bugs because that's what her degree is in, but she's actually the horticulture extension agent. And Abby's actually going to come talk to us in January more about the Ag Expo also.
And it's great whenever we can partner with other, for instance, this with CSU extension to provide these educational opportunities for people in the county.
So I gave the websites, again, MountSopriusCD.org, BuckcliffCD.org, SouthsideCD.org. And you can always call the office, by the way, at 404-3439 and ask any questions that you might have about some of these cost shares. If you have some irrigation water, you want to have some ideas, or you would like some ideas about how to be a little bit more efficient in your use of the water. Again, those are cost shares that are available thanks to the Garfield County Commissioners as well as Department of Agriculture in some cases, just depending on the size and exactly what it is that you're trying to do. Mike Kishimoto is a fantastic resource. If it is that big a project that it needs a little engineering help, I don't know how much you would pay an actual water engineer if you had to pay them, but if Mike is available and it's a job that fits under the context of what he's allowed to do, he's fantastic. So again, 404-3439. Follow the Conservation Districts on Facebook. And is there anything else we should talk about that we haven't mentioned yet?
Pretty well covered.
I was going to say, we both on the air and off, we covered a lot of ground today, as usual.
Yes.
All right, all the best, gentlemen. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thank
Have
you
a good. Great winter. Okay. Lots of snow, right? We'll be checking those snow tell sites, too. You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.